IVM.
Welcome to the fifth episode of the Sponge Lessons podcast. I'm with Amnipur Misra, and we're going to discuss his book, Sponge Leadership Lessons I Learned from My Client. And today we're going to be talking about the fifth chapter, Doing Good Fairly. So, Amnipur, what's the idea behind this? Why would you do good unfairly?
Oh, well, you know, a lot of times, willy-nilly, you end up doing good very unfairly. For example, I mean, the whole story behind this chapter is that very often you have a mistaken impression that people who work in the NGO sector should be paid very poor salaries. They should be dressed in khadi, kurta and pajama, and they should be carrying a jute handbag.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a cliche, you know. So
should we use the word jolawala?
Jolawala kind of stuff. But that world is gone, right? So I got to understand the new world of not-for-profit when, you know, I got a call from Ulka founder Bal Munkur when I was in Chennai, saying, you know, my friend has taken over as the CEO of this charitable organization called World Vision. Will you go meet him? So I went to meet this gentleman, and it turned out, you know, Mr. Raliaram was a client of mine in 1979-80 when I was in advertising, and I jogged his memory. Then he remembered, you know, meeting me, and we had a long chat on what World Vision is doing and how they had this fantastic program called Adopt a Child. So you pay, those days, I think about 5,000 rupees a year.
Okay.
And that money is used for paying the school education of the child.
Right.
And they will identify a child for you, and you will get a letter from the child every 6 months.
Okay.
With a photograph. So it was a very nicely run program. And he said, we get a lot of funding from abroad, but we need to collect money from India. So how do we do it? We brainstormed. And then he said, you know, I want to take you out for lunch. I said, okay. So we came down, and he had this lovely big car, Contessa, waiting for him. And I got into that. And
you're
then
dating the story a little bit. You're dating the story a little bit.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But, you know, but that's the truth, right? Today it would have probably been whatever. You
know. Not a Contessa.
Yeah, not a Contessa, but probably a Toyota Fortuner or a Mahindra, you know, SUV or whatever, right? So I went, and then later I was talking to him about, and he took me to a 5-star restaurant. We had lunch, and then I talked to him about, you know, sir, you know, I'm a little curious to know, if you don't mind, you know, I mean, World Vision pays you a good salary, isn't it? So he said, yeah, I mean, I'm not being paid like the way I was paid in ICL computers, but I'm paid a decent amount of money, and I maintain my lifestyle. I said, how does it work? So then he explained that very often donors think that what you give to the NGO, the NGO should spend bare minimum on what they call administration. And most of the money should go to the recipient. Like, for example, all the money which comes to World Vision should actually go to the children. You know, nothing should be kept by the administration. But he said that's a fallacy. You know, global averages up to 25% should be spent. A lot of donors insist that that should be spent by you on your people.
Right.
Because if you don't pay your people well enough, there is going to be a lot of leakage.
Right.
So he said, we maintain a very good healthy average, and I have a very good team. I make sure that they are all paid market wages. You know, he said, I'm okay. I'm, you know, post-retirement, but all my people are young. They're 35, 30, 40, and I give them careers. So they have to be paid well. You know, why should, just because you work in the NGO sector, why should you be paid half the salary or one-third the salary someone with an equivalent competency gets in the for-profit sector?
Also, I think you restrict your candidate pool a lot, right, if you don't pay reasonable salaries, because then all of a sudden the number one criteria becomes passion for the subject rather than competence.
That's a danger, right? Yeah. So then you'll end up recruiting a lot of people with a lot of passion and very little competence.
Yes.
But you actually need a combination of the
two. You need both, but you can't let competence slide.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't let, you know, say I only want people with passion and they'll work for nothing.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you'll get very poor quality people. So this again, you know, this story played back because when I met, I got a call from Changavalli Venkat, whom I knew is a couple of years my senior from IIM Ahmedabad. And he said, look, Ambi, I want you to come to Hyderabad. So I said, yeah, Venkat, what are you doing now? He said, no, you come. I'll send a car to pick you up. And so I went. And the car came, picked me up, and took me to his what he calls the central nerve center. Okay. So he was running a company called EMRI, Emergency Medical Response Company, which had an emergency service called 108. So I knew Venkat as a guy who was an expert in flavors and perfumes. I mean, he's worked in the flavor and perfume space for for a long time.
That's very different.
Yeah, and he can make out, you know, a fragrance from a mile, and he can say, you know, this is what it is. So I sat with him and we started talking. So I said, you know, Venkat, I'm very surprised, you know. It's like a total pivot here from selling fragrances to soap and, you know, shampoo companies, you're doing this. So he said, no, it happened through accident. I was at a seminar in Chennai, and the speaker before me was Ramalinga Raju. And he spoke about medical problems in the country. And then over lunch, later when I was talking to him, he said, I've got this dream of doing an emergency response service in Andhra, the erstwhile Andhra Pradesh. And he broadly outlined a vision for that company. And he asked Venkat, what is your background? At the end of, I think, an half an hour, 1 hour conversation, Mr. Raju told Venkat, you know, would you like to come and run, set it up for me, you know, set it up and run it for me. So Venkat said, look, you know, I'm working in a multinational, blah, blah, blah. What you're saying is very interesting because my home state is Andhra. I'd love to come. So Mr. Raju said, what is your pay package now? Or whatever. So they worked. I mean, so he gave him a decent pay package. It's not something like a Jholawala pay package. And Venkat went to Hyderabad and set up the entire, you know, 108 system. Which, according to what he told me, is even better than the American 911. Because not only do they send an, you know, anywhere in Andhra at that time, he said, within half an hour, anywhere in Andhra, within half an hour of your call, the ambulance will reach. And the ambulance has the right to take you to a hospital. The ambulance people are trained never to accept money from any patient. The whole thing is run free. And including stuff like, all of them are paid well, including he had some doctors on call. So when I was with him for that 4 or 5 hours, I could listen into conversation that someone calling from somewhere saying, you know, we have hit a hit, you know, a car has hit this and we need an ambulance, and the ambulance is sent and the doctor is saying, okay, you know, can you breathe? Can you open the shirt? You know, so there was a doctor giving instructions and there was a driver asking for an instruction. So the whole thing was internet and, you know, a mobile system enabled. And I mean, he told me some fantastic stories. Again, a top ranking, highly qualified MBA with a great amount of experience from the corporate sector moves into the NGO sector and then creates this great thing called 108. And today I think 108 is there in something like 6 or 7 states in India. And I, at that time, I think Mr. Narendra Modi was the chief minister of Gujarat. And Venkat was saying how he, you know, Mr. Modi invited him to Gujarat. And even before the presentation was over, he asked Venkat, when can you start this? And, you know, and
that's,
he said,
success,
you know, and that's, you know, fantastic. And that's, that happens only if you, if the NGO sector says that, look, I will pay good emolument packages to people who work in the sector. Because that's how I'll get highly competent people to come and work for me.
Very interesting. Now, that's a really interesting way of looking at it. What I'd like to kind of move to is you were mentioning how there was a book which really inspired your thoughts behind this chapter.
Yeah. So, you know, there is this fascinating book called Man's Search for Meaning, written by Viktor E. Frankl. Now, Viktor E. Frankl was in the concentration camp, the Nazi concentration camp. And he wrote this book in the, it's a nice book. It's a very short book. And it tends to still get, it's probably 50 years old or more. It still gets rated as one of the most read books in the world. His whole thing was, and I think it applies to people who work in the NGO sector, you know, people who work in the pro bono NGO sector. His whole thing was, you don't pursue happiness. You pursue what is satisfying for you. Happiness will follow. And he had this, you know, revelation, you know, when he was in the concentration camp and he got, saw people getting gassed, and then he realized, and in sitting there, he realized what is life, you know. And so it's a fabulous book. And I, my hat's off to people who work in the NGO sector because they all do a great job. But the point is, you know, we need to make sure that they are paid a fair fair wage. You know, right. Why should you, you know, make them suffer just because they work in the NGO sector? And I could extend that to even teaching and stuff like that.
To any social sector.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think companies are waking up to that. You know, when the government has regulated this whole thing about CSR, that every company has spent 2%. And I think companies are realizing that, you know, some of the companies sitting on big amount of money. And I was told the total amount of CSR money from the Indian corporate sector is about 6,000 crores.
Right.
It's not a big amount compared to the...
It's still a fairly large amount, which you need to have it managed competently.
Absolutely. So right. So companies are today understanding that you cannot, you know, spend this kind of money on, you know, without people who can manage it well.
Right.
So in fact, companies are saying, look, they're moving some senior, highly qualified managers to run their CSR operations so that it is run properly.
Interesting. That makes that does make sense, right? Because I mean, if you don't have the right kind of people who are running these areas of CSR, the social aspects of what corporates are doing, they will not get the results that they want either, right? And if they're not going to, it's not just a question of the leakages which you were discussing earlier, but even from a result-oriented purpose, right? If you want to, if you're doing an education CSR, you want to have certain results to come out. And the best people who drive those results are probably going to want to have reasonable pay packages.
Absolutely. So, which is why I think government has mandated something. They've said something like 10 or 20% of the CSR can be spent on managing it.
Okay.
You know, maybe that needs to be relooked. Maybe we need to look at, you know, allocating more because, you know, if you want to spend, let's say, 5 crores a year
right.
on CSR, you need people who can run it for you.
Correct.
Right?
So that's a crore a year in salaries, which you're going to need. I mean, to spend 5 crores a year effectively, you're going to need to have a lot of people. Yeah, good people who can manage that.
Good people. So, I think that's this chapter about, you know, that, you know, doing good has to be done, doing good fairly, which is you need to hire the right people, pay them well. And I think also my own discussion with people who run CSR organizations, they are very open to people coming in, giving suggestions and, you know, inputs. But, you know, a lot of times the question is, how come you're paid so much?
Hmm.
That I think is a wrong question.
I think that's an unfair question to ask anybody, no matter what they're doing, right? Because I mean, you're paid what people are willing to pay you.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, like
for the job done, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's an unfair question when anybody asks anybody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how is like I ask you in every chapter. I mean, like, how have you taken the lessons from this chapter and applied it to your own career / life?
Well, I think in our organization we. Whenever there is a crisis, we tend to, you know, ask everyone to contribute, and invariably the organization also matches the contribution. I think that's a strong statement that you make to your own employees that, you know, you're paying money towards some earthquake and it matches. So that's one. Mm. The other interesting thing which FCB does globally is that they create this thing called the Global Day of Giving.
Okay.
And on that day, around the world, every office is encouraged to actually go and spend the day with an NGO.
Mm, okay.
And so our teams actually used to go and spend time. We identified schools. We identified, you know, disabled people. You know, Plastic Society was one year we sent our people. They went there. I think we went to, you know, an orphanage. We got client to sponsor paint.
Okay.
And we used top quality paint to paint up the orphanage, paint up the school. I think those are things which, you know, one has done as a part of one's job.
Mm.
But, you know, I don't think I've done enough. And I think the person I hold up as someone who's done a phenomenal job of balancing both his career, his company, and the NGO sector is my dear friend, Jayendra.
Okay.
Now, Jayendra runs a very successful company with Santhal called Cube Cinema Systems.
You know, okay.
So they're a high-tech cinema technology
company.
They're
the company that distributes into the box office, the direct film itself,
yeah,
right?
So they send digital, you know, you know, things like that. And you know, I sit on Cube board and I know Jayendra for a long, long time. He's from my school. So Jayendra has a successful career, but he also on the side runs or supports very strongly a trust called the Bhumika Trust. And okay. Bhumika Trust, when Chennai went through the flood havoc some years ago, a few years ago, Bhumika Trust was rated by all the media organizations as doing the best, you know, support for the flood affected people.
Okay.
Right. And due to his own personal reason, he realized that people who suffer from a stroke suffer what is called aphasia, which means their speech becomes highly impaired.
Right.
And he discovered his wife had the problem all of a sudden, and he discovered that there are no good trained people who can train voice training.
Right.
So he took her to I think Chicago for 2 months and got the voice, you know, got the voice trainers to work with her. He saw the improvement. He could have stopped with that. But Jayendra being Jayendra said, no, why can't I do this for more people? So he then organized a seminar where he flew the experts in from Chicago and got them to talk and start training voice trainers in India.
Interesting.
And today I think that is, that got written about in many newspapers and magazines. But more than that, I think he started a discussion on this whole concept called aphasia. I know my father-in-law had a stroke and he had the same problem, but we couldn't get anyone to come and train him to speak. And he only used to say, you know. But the fact is, you know, voice cards were still there.
Right.
But, you know, his brain was not giving the right instruction. So in this case, you know, Jayendra. And so I think I'm just giving him as an example because he's a dear friend. But I think there are a lot of others who have been able to do both, which is to have a very successful career as well as do significant work in the not-for-profit sector. And my hat's off to all of them.
That was really interesting. And so just as everybody, as I mentioned, the book is called Sponge Leadership Lessons I Learned from My Clients by Ambi Parmeswaran. And next week, we're going to talk about a topic which sounds really, really interesting. Who reads body copy? That's going to be our next episode. And for now, thank you.
Thank you.